A man walks into a cafe with his dog, and the waiter comes up and says to him, "I'm sorry, you can't have your dog in here, but it's my seeing eye dog." "Oh well, okay, first cup of coffee's on us, you can stay." A few minutes later, another man comes up with his dog. The first man goes up to him and says, "You won't be able to have your dog in here unless you tell him it's your seeing eye dog." Okay. The waiter comes up and says to the second man, "Sorry, you can't have your dog in here, but it's my seeing eye dog." "I'm sorry, but they don't use chihuahuas as seeing eye dogs." "What? They gave me a chihuahua?" Who's lying and who's not? Who's blind and who's not? This morning I want us to be seeing eye people. I want us to open our eyes this morning to the stark realities of the prison world, but more importantly, to travel towards what it means to understand the amazing work of Prison Fellowship International as a God-empowered enterprise. Thanks for your company today. I always look forward to doing what I'm doing today. I thank you for your generosity in giving me your time by being here today, and it is a privilege to do what I'm doing. I'm an Anglican pastor. Is that okay? I'm married to Wendy. I have 3 children and 4 grandchildren, and I worship at the Vineyard in Mount Evelyn. I'm just turned 80, and I've been heavily involved in theatre, and I love really good movies, gardening, dancing, all of those kinds of things. 10 years ago, I couldn't have given a rat's thought to the prison world or to prisoners. They were invisible to me. The radar was not on them at all in my life. And then I met a man called David Greer. Now, David had been visiting prisoners for about 10 years up until that time, and he invited me to be a partner with him visiting prisoners. I prayed about it. In the end, I said yes. Now, 10 years later, I have a heartfelt commitment to all prisoners, indeed to all human beings, with unconditional love and all that means, and working that out in my life. I take you to a prison where a big, burly, brawny man with lots of bravado comes into this first session of an 8-week course in St. Mark's Gospel. He sits there very quietly, and at the end of the first session, he stands up, walks to the front and says, "I'm not coming back to the second class. You lot, you're just a bunch of religious fruitcakes. You'll never see me again." Beginning of the second class, guess what? He turns up and he comes with another guy who looks just like him. He's bald, he's brawny, big man, with lots of tattoos on him and all of that. And by the end of the second session, he comes up to the front again. And this time he says, "I have never been in a place where I've been so loved before." And he's in tears. And the other man who came in with him comes up to the front and rests his head on the first man's shoulder. That is music to the ears of Prison Fellowship, and I hope it would be to yours as well. Now, I wonder what the key to this is. Because we have this course, The Prisoner's Journey, in countries all over the world. They meet a man in Mark's Gospel who is despised, rejected, betrayed, accused, arrested, tried, sentenced, punished, a life lost. And they identify with this man. Who is he? I want to know more about this man from this, what do you call it? Mark's Gospel, or whatever it is. They identify with him, and they know that he identifies with them. For us, this is a flagship project, coming to Christ in their hundreds globally through this course. In one particular course, there were 12 motorcyclists came. You believe that? They all came, and at the end of the course, they all gave their lives to Christ in the graduation ceremony. Can you believe that? Christ can touch the hardest of hearts, and that includes mine. I was a master, a political hardball, able to manipulate and execute the dirty tricks that often come with the political process. I was truly a nasty piece of work. That's the voice of Charles Colson. He knew that something was wrong in his life when he was charged with all the crimes that he committed at Watergate as Nixon's hatchet man. And nearly all of us here today will remember that big event. He gets into his car, this Charles Colson, the hatchet man, so the press called him, crumbled in a flood of tears, unable to drive, calling out to God with the first honest prayer of his life. He said, that was the night Jesus Christ came into my life. So he gets into the car, Nixon's man, and gets out of the car, Christ's man. What a miracle. What a man that God has chosen, as you'll see now. So God took him by the scruff of the neck and cast him into the kingdom of heaven. And the law came along a little bit later by the scruff of the neck and cast him into prison. And while he's in prison, a lot of people are converted through him. He writes his autobiography, Born Again, and then begins the work of reforming the criminal justice system over the next 40 years. So once he's released, he works at that for the rest of his life, so that now we're in 120 countries in the world and by far the largest prison visiting operation in the world. And I feel it's an honour to be a part of that. And I hope you do if you support us, as I know you do, as you'll see in a few minutes. Now, any bank robbers here? Come on, none at all. Come on, someone's lying. None?
I've been robbed by one.
You've been robbed by one. Good answer. Any tax dodgers here? Even in a small way? No? What about liars? Any liars here? Oh, that's everyone, is it? I like writing lists. They're not shopping lists as such. A list of all the ways you can lie, and I got to 20. I didn't know what half of them were until I explored it a bit further. Mary Kay Beard was a bank robber, a tax dodger, and a liar, and she, with her cohorts, loved robbing banks, committing grand larcenies all over the eastern states of America back in the 70s and 80s. Then one day, she got in with the mafia, the mob, and they went to do this diamond heist together. And then she realised she didn't want to work with them, so she was about to double-cross them. They found out, and just before they murdered her, she was arrested, convicted, and sentenced to 21 years jail. That's a long time, isn't it? A long time. In the 16th year, she was flipping through a Gideon's Bible. You've all heard of Gideon's, haven't you? I'm sure you have. She came to the 16th chapter, and in that she read about God, Ezekiel declaring God's promise to restore Israel after the return of the exiles from Babylon. And so she reads this verse. God said, I will give you a new heart and a new spirit I will put within you. Oh, isn't that the gospel in a nutshell? New heart, new spirit. A real transplant from a heart of stone to a heart of flesh. Do you know what she prayed? You do that for me, God, and I will give the rest of my life back to you. The result of that promise, from prison, and then after she got out 6 years later, she set up thousands of Christmas trees all over the eastern states of America with a gospel message on the tree and the offer to shoppers to give a $30 gift for... Most people say, you know, because of what's coming. Prisoners? No. The children and families of prisoners. because they do time too. In fact, for many, they do worse time than the prisoners, the fathers and grandfathers themselves. The shame and the stigma and the solitariness of being the child of a prisoner. Like Clarissa's dad, I always have trouble with that. Clarissa's dad went to jail when she was 4. He went to a different prison over many, many years. Very hard to keep in touch with him. She was bullied at school, even by teachers. And then one day, she received the first gift in her life, and it was her father. And it was because of the Angel Tree Project started by Mary Kay Beard. Okay? It had a huge impact on her, and today she recalls that day where she says, that was the first moment in my life when I realised I was being loved. A gift from my dad, who was an absentee father in my life. And right through the years after that, Prison Fellowship has supported that family. And whenever now she buys an Angel Tree gift, she remembers that time when that gift was the first time in her life when she was loved. And she experiences the love in memory of that event, which has continued to her up to the present day. So what do I say to you? Thank you for supporting Angel Tree. 1,000 children of prisoners in Victoria last Christmas. Thank you. Just immense. Go home and be thankful to God that you contributed to the Angel Tree Project. There are 7,000 human beings in cages in Victoria today. How many? 7,000. That's a lot of people, isn't it? But some of these facts are pretty horrendous, pretty horrific, because half of them, when they leave, will be back within 2 years. And even more horrific, I've got to give you the facts, this is the dark side, and there is a very, very bright side too, as you know. The other half are in remand. That means half of them have not yet been tried and sentenced, either to jail or to release, because they're innocent. Incredible, isn't it? And some of them wait for 2 years, and more recently we heard of a case of a man who waited for 7 years before he was tried, and he was found innocent. Another one for a long period of time. And if you haven't been found guilty, the period of time added on to half of that is taken off your prison sentence. But it's a terrible situation. As you might have read in The Age on Saturday, the whole prison guard situation is serious. A lot of prison guards are now leaving because of the staff crisis and not enough guards to go around. So please pray for this clogged, antiquated system, unreformed over many years. In the world, in Australia, we have 50,000 volunteers. 50,000. And half of them are over 50. What does that say? Half. Over 50. Our prison visitors are the beating heart of our work. They are the core. They are the agents of change, as are you who pray for them, agents of change and transformation in their lives. Now, Deborah and I have arranged for the doors to be locked at the end of the service today. Now, look, it's better than it sounds. It'll only be for a week. Not a year, not 21. Just a week, okay? We'll bring in bunks, we'll bring in food. You can use your iPhone until 3 o'clock this afternoon, and that's it for the rest of the week. And remember, you'll be here for next Sunday already. Don't you love that? Imagine what it would be like for all of us to spend a week here together. Imagine the creative stuff that could go on, some different things. You'd find out a lot more about some of you, wouldn't you? You'd learn how to pray together, talk together, share your lives, your memories of your long lives together. It would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Better than you think when you face up to the reality of it. Okay. So what we do when we go in is we really put out our hand like this and we say, can we be friends? Can we be friends? And most of them say yes. Some of them say, don't know yet. And we have to sometimes go in for longer so they see we're serious. And some of them say, not on your life, never. Because they get to realise you're what in their terms are a religious person. Okay. Brazil has been in the news a lot lately, has it not? And there's a state in Brazil called Minas Gerais. And I want you to meet the recuperandos, the recuperating. The recuperating are inmates in this prison, which is the most developed prison in the world, probably, as far as I know. They've done, to cut a long story short, they have this project where they choose 1,700 inmates to be part of a project. They have to have been in prison for already 5 years. They have to have family living in the city, and they have to be willing to change. And the authorities say to them, if you stay in this prison for this time and you become a part of this course, we will show you what love means. Well, after 1 year, they're offered keys to leave the prison. 90% choose to stay. And half of those 10% who leave return. They'd rather come back in again because they're learning what love means. But every month they have to be locked up to remind them that actually they're in prison, and in the documentary that I saw, they're offered a coffee and a donut through the bars. I think it's wonderful. I wish more like that could happen here, but hardly anything is in this country, in most places. And we've got 15 prisons here, 15 prisons. And whenever something happens that we need to spend money on, it'll be another prison. In New South Wales, they've got 35 prisons. Can you imagine? With another 12 being built. Amazing. Okay. Do you know why I'm showing you this bag of biscuits? You do. Why?
For
Easter. Easter, the Easter bake. Who's heard of the Easter bake? Right. Oh, no. Okay. Since 1990, we have offered a bag of 10 homemade biscuits to every prisoner in Victoria. So how many biscuits is that? 10 biscuits? Got it. Oh, she's clever, this one. 70,000 biscuits every Easter, except during COVID. Okay. And I tell you, they love them. They hardly ever get anything at all, let alone biscuits. And some of them, they open them up and put them on their table, you know, lay it out, and then they decide not to have them all at once. So I spread them out over the next few days. See, it's not just the biscuits, it's the symbolism, isn't it? You love us enough to give us these biscuits. You love us enough to even come into prison to spend time with us when we know what it's like to be out there. Why wouldn't you rather be out there like we would? So it's a loving act, and it means a lot. Every prisoner in Victoria, every Easter, except the last two. We also have a children's camp every September, and we get about 50 children going to that. Not the last 2 years, we're still to resume that, but it's a wonderful camp for the children of prisoners. On the way down on the bus, they're very, very apprehensive. They've never been on a camp before. Some of them have never been into the country before. On the way back on the bus, different. Can we come back next year, Mari? That was the best year of our lives. That's the camp. There are also lots of sports events. We have what's called SLAM. We have a number of young people who go into prison and play netball, basketball, football with prisoners in some prisons where that is possible. And then every day when prisoners are released, we have someone at the gates to meet them. We get about 25 of those a year. We just don't have the people to do it. And they take them to wherever they need to go for the first 24 hours. It's called T24. 24 hours, right? And they go to accommodation places like Odyssey House, or to their home or the home of a friend, to the bank, to the cafe, whatever, 24 hours. And then they promise to mentor them and monitor their lives for the next year after that. That is a huge task.
because, you know, 1,000 prisoners go into Melbourne Assessment Prison every week and 1,000 come out. I mean, it's just a huge movement.
Much too big to cope with everything.
Okay. Now, this is my big bad ball. Don't worry, I'm not going to roll it down there or there. It's my big bad wrecking ball. And I like to imagine this ball is being rolled down an alley with 10 pins at the other end. And the 10 pins are the 10 pins of many, perhaps most prisoners. Dysfunctional family. Poor education. Bad company. Peer pressure. Put those two things together, you've got drink, drugs and violence. Big time. Add to that intergenerational crime from way back. Poor choices, mental damage, personality types, genetics and so on. In many cases, all 10 pins are knocked down. Can you imagine that? Now, all of us have probably had 2, 3 or more pins knocked down in our lives, and we have to cope with them. Not easy, especially if they're close together. But in their cases, a lot of these things are just continuous from very early in life. Can you imagine that? What we want to do is to put the pins back up, right? And here are 3 or 4 of the ways we do it. The first one is to put the victimizer and the victim at the same table, not next to each other, across the table, just in case, so that the prisoner can see the harm that he has done to the victim, to the family and friends, the harm that's been done. That's the first one. Secondly, to help them to experience forgiveness. What's forgiveness? Grace. What's grace? Faith. Oh, what's faith? A lot of them, because they're so poorly educated, have no idea what the meanings of the words that we try to use to help them to understand how they can be recuperated, restored, right, retrieved, and all of those are beautiful R words that bring them back into some semblance of normal life like we know, sort of normal. Okay. The next one is anger management. I won't say much about that. That's a big one. Restore levels of mental health. Do you know what it's like not to be mentally healthy? Maybe some of you experience difficulty, you know, since COVID and during COVID. It's not a hard one. You know, the mind is a formidable jailer. And then there's, of course. One particular man who murdered his wife, sat down next to him, it was terrible, murdered his wife with one hand, discovered later on that he was also an artist. And he did beautiful artwork. So helping prisoners to discover what they are good at, what their gifts are. Many of them have never known. Maybe there are some gifts that you have that you've never actually discovered. And the rest of your life is a good time maybe to discover what they might be or to engage in activities you've never engaged in before. Okay, so get them back on their feet again, restored, retrieved, re-established in their lives. But most of all, we want to see them receiving Jesus Christ. 3 men hanging on a tree on a hill, and the man on the right says, hurls insults to the man in the middle, and the man on the left says to the man in the middle, "I deserve to die as a thief, but will you remember me when you come into your kingdom?" What did the man in the middle say? "Ah, you made your bed, you lie in it." No. Today, you will be with me in paradise. The man's faith and the man in the middle's grace. Isn't that what life's about? Grace and faith, underlined by love. That's it, isn't it? So this man was willing to go to prison, to hang on a tree. He doesn't have 4 walls. He doesn't have any room to move forwards, backwards, sideways, up or down. He's pinned, nailed to his cross, and that is his prison. But what he did on the cross sets us prisoners free, right, from all of our crimes, which are innumerable, let me tell you. I cannot think of a sin I've never committed. I really can't. Mention one? Oh, I probably did that sometime or other. All debts paid. Isn't that wonderful? Every debt of every sin you've ever committed, paid for. Including the future ones. The ones you do today after you leave here, maybe. Right? He foots the bill. Ah, Pam. Pam grew up with lots of bruises on her body. She had an alcoholic father who constantly berated and punished her mother and threatened to do the same if she intervened, which she did very, very often. Sooner or later, when she reached the age of 15, she made a decision. What might that decision be at the age of 15? Leave home. She left home and she joined a gang. Wouldn't you understand that? She belonged to the gang. Their purposes in life were the same as hers, which was to get other people before they got her. Makes sense, doesn't it? She had a sense of mission. But after five jail terms and five gangs, she gave up. And here she was in her cell at night, and she got down on her knees and said, I can't go any lower than this. I have had enough. Lord, if you live, I need to know that you live right now, that you exist right now. And over the next few minutes, she prayed and she got up from her prayer. And if you'd like to close your eyes, this is what she said. It was like I was standing under a waterfall and everything dirty was being washed away. And I was clean, really clean, for the first time. I'm not afraid anymore. God's got my back now. He brought me to prison. Now I am free. That's music to our ears. That's a wonderful story, isn't it? Because Jesus is the one who likes to go down deep, dark holes, even when the bottom of the hole is a cell in a prison, and to bring them up out of the darkness of their cell and their hole into the light of his new day. I cannot say anything better to you than what I've just said. I could put it in different ways, but you know what I mean, don't you? You attend this church. Many of you have probably been here for a long, long time, so you'll know what I mean. I know the challenge for me is to really live that out, and that ain't so easy, is it? Ah, prisons. Not nice things, are they? Prisons are hospital beds where a lot of people have a smaller bed than the cell of a prisoner. Children bullied in their backyards or in their schoolyards. Many homeless people. Wives bullied in their home. Parliament? Ooh, that's a big one, isn't it? And what about personal ones like addictions and obsessions that we might have? Depression, anxiety, shyness, loneliness, bitterness, unforgiveness, unresolved guilt, unresolved grief. Now there's a bag full, isn't there? Get down on your knees, as I do sometimes, often, and simply pray that God takes away my prisons. Because when I sit next to a man who's murdered his wife, I think I'm in the same boat. Not that I've murdered my wife, but I've committed other sins and other crimes. And in the Lord's eyes, there's not that much difference, is there? Now, I've got six copies of this book called Why Forgive. It is a book of the 30 lives of prisoners and ex-prisoners whose lives have been transformed by Jesus Christ. An amazing set of stories. When I read it, I wanted to read it again because it had things in it like finding the cycle of hatred. Bless your persecutors. Forgiveness and justice and mercy. Justice and mercy together. When reconciling is impossible, accepting responsibility, not a step but a journey. They're just the titles of some of those stories. Also, we've got a magazine
called Set Free, which comes out every 3 months. And when you go out of that door, on the right-hand side, there's a form you can fill in indicating that you would like one of these sent, or if you'd like to be part of, have a prayer diary, regularly you can. And if you want to consider, just consider being a prison visitor. Remember, half are over 50, and some of them have been doing it for 20 or 30 years. It is never too late. You never go in by yourself. It's always with another person. You have to be trained, but it doesn't take that long. And even if you just want to express an interest, it doesn't obligate you in any way. Okay. And to finish, just two or three things. One is, we believe that the first known sermon that Jesus preached was in the synagogue in Luke chapter 4, and he refers to prisoners in that. And in his last sermon, recorded sermon, Matthew 25, he refers to prisons and prisoners and about visiting them, and as you visit them, you're really visiting me. Now, this message this morning will not self-destruct. It is likely to be the same in 5 years, 10 years' time, as far as I can see. I don't see much change. Acts chapter 16, Paul and Silas are in prison. There are angels and guards all over the place. But because the church prays for them earnestly and strenuously, the miracle happens and they're released from their prison gates. Pray for prisons. Ask for our prayer diary. Talk to me afterwards. Now, I painted a dark picture this morning, haven't I? And it is dark. It really is. From a Christian point of view, it is really dark. But as a Christian, there is light shining in those dark places, and that's what matters, the light of Christ shining in these dark places. And you don't have to go to prison to be behind bars. And as you leave here today, or at least until you get to the locked door and you find you've got to turn around, then you can sort of pray with each other about God releasing the prisons, releasing you from the prisons in your life. Now, if you're not convinced by my story this morning, that's fine. Talk to me afterwards. If you think that prisoners deserve everything they get and redemption they should not receive in any shape or form, right? If you still believe that, there's some who do. Had one man stand up and say, "How dare you talk about the forgiveness of prisoners?" That's impossible. I could never, ever do that. I'm a million miles away from there, and I do believe you can. And those 10 years of between, you know, thinking that, you know, not giving a rat's thought to them at all, all the way up to a heartfelt commitment to them. I believe that God wants to change our lives in a really positive way towards prisons and towards Prison Fellowship International. So there we go. Thank you very much for... You've been very attentive, I think. Thank you very much indeed. Okay. Thanks, Deborah.
Friends, as we leave this place, may we remember and live in the light that has come into the world, the light that no darkness can ever overcome. Let us welcome God's life into the darkest and most trapped parts of our own hearts, our own minds, our own lives. And let us pray that that light would come into the lights of others, living in the darkest and most closed of places, bringing new light, new hope, and new life. Amen.